Yesterday was Shabbos Parshas Shoftim, and in the year Tavshin and Aleph, Shabbos Parshas Shoftim, it seemed as if, at least relative to the way that Rebbe had been speaking earlier, even though it was definitely over the previous weeks, the emphasis on the topic of Mashiach and Geula was back in full force and very strong. And Rebbe spoke a lot about the idea of, over those weeks, about the idea of how this time is about preparing ourselves for the actual Geula, and getting ourselves in the right frame of mind, and then relating to the concepts, and then starting to live our lives in ways that are consistent with the way we would be living in the time of Gola. And the week of Shabbos Parashat Shoftim, the Rebbe really sort of seemed to like pull out all the stops, and the Rebbe said repeatedly, even though it isn't mentioned as often in how they wrote it up as of talk, but they built the whole structure around it, that ever referred to, throughout that idea of the Rebbe, of the Nasi Hadar being the Navi Hadar, the prophet of the generation, and the judge of the generation, the prophet of the generation, the advisor of the generation. And this is all part of the related to the idea that, as he's brought later in the Sicha, that from the Rambam, that the Nevuah will return to the Jewish people prior to the coming of Mashiach, as part of the preparatory stages for the actual coming of Mashiach. That I was said, especially by Mashiach himself, that even before he actually completes the redemptive process, he'll be revealed as a prophet. So, basically, the real issue, there are many, many issues, but the real issue that comes up and sort of throughout the Sikha, is a theme throughout the Sikha, and sort of gets passed by a lot of people because of all the exciting stuff that's in the Sikha. So there's certain things that sort of get overlooked and actually are very important and provide a better context and understanding of the points that the Rebbe was trying to make. So just to take a step back, in general, when it comes to human nature, how people relate to new things, so you find two seemingly opposite responses to something that's new. On the one hand, you see that it's in human nature when something new comes along to be excited about it. In fact, people get sort of tired of the old, and it's out with the old, in with the new. People generally tend to get more excited about things that are new and fresh. So that's one response that you see by people when encountering something that's new. On the other hand, you sometimes see the seemingly exact opposite, that when people encounter something that's new, there's a certain resistance that people have to things that are new. They like what's old and familiar and comfortable. There seems to be a certain resistance to things that are new. So what's the difference? What is it? Why is it that sometimes we see people respond to something new with enthusiasm and excitement, and in fact, they're always looking out for something new? And on the other hand, we sometimes see the opposite. So basically, the difference really is it has to do with if it's something that you already relate to. If it's something that, an idea that you're already somewhat, something you're already somewhat comfortable with, so when the new comes along, it's exciting. You get a new development in the thing that you're already comfortable with, so you sort of relate to it already, And now there's a new development in that. So that's when that which is new is exciting. And you're always looking for the next new thing that's going to come along. When you're talking about something that you're not comfortable with, something that's so new that you don't relate to it and you're not really comfortable with it, your perception is that this new thing that comes along is forcing you to change in ways that you're not comfortable with, so that's when there's a tremendous resistance to that which is new and an insistence on trying to hold on to that which is old and familiar and comfortable. So really it has to do with if you relate to it somewhat already, and it's sort of the newness is sort of a continuation of what you're familiar and comfortable with, but it's just a new development, it's a continuation from that. It's new and fresh, so that's exciting. When it's something new that seems to be not a brand new thing, which you don't relate to, which you're not comfortable with, which you haven't developed a certain comfort level with yet, it's totally new, it's forcing you to change and adapt in ways that you're not familiar with, so that's when it brings out in a person a certain resistance. So the question here is, how are we supposed to relate to the Indian of Geula? So there's two ways of relating to the Indian of Geula. One way of relating to the Indian of Geula, this is something that's, it depends. If you perceive it as something new and radically different than anything that you've ever known before, and then it's going to force you to change everything in your life and everything about your life, and so the natural reaction is going to be a certain resistance to that message, that there's this new major change and upheaval and that's going to dramatically alter your life as you know it, the world as you know it, everything you know and are familiar and comfortable with. So the natural response is that it arouses a resistance, and sometimes even a very powerful resistance to the message. If on the other hand you were to relate to it as something that has already begun, and you are comfortable and familiar with the, you've already adjusted yourself to the beginning of the process, and now we're talking about a continuation of a process that you're already familiar with and you already can relate to. So then, not only are you, so then the opposite, you're eagerly anticipating each new development as it unfolds. So the guy who totally doesn't relate to new technologies, each new development is more irritating and more annoying and more upsetting, because he's not in that world. He doesn't relate to the whole thing. So each new thing that comes out is just makes it feel further and further, more and more removed from what's going on around them, and to relate less and less to the people around. A person who's already somewhat technologically savvy, so each new thing that comes out is eagerly anticipated, he's eagerly awaiting the next new development, the next new step. Maybe he may be concerned that he doesn't have the financial means to keep up or whatever it is that he did, but if he's capable of tapping into it, it's new, it's exciting, it's interesting, he wants to learn it, he wants to master it, he wants to, and then each new release is eagerly anticipated by all kinds of people who are waiting for the next new thing. So the same thing applies with Geula. That's really how it works. Do you feel like you're in a process that has already begun and you relate to and connect to, and therefore you're eagerly looking forward and anticipating the next development and the process, or is it something that's totally strange and foreign to you? And therefore, you see each thing as, each further talk and about this tremendous change and upheaval in your world and your worldview and your life as you know it, seems threatening and something that it inspires resistance. So the Rebbe starts off the sicha by saying that the parsha of Shaftim is a commandment to appoint judges. So the Rebbe says this clearly relates to the prophetic declaration of what will take place in the time of the redemption, where God says, "Vashiva sheftayach kevarishayin, v'yatzayach kevatchila, I will restore your judges as originally, and your advisors as in the beginning." So the Rebbe says, that being the case, since we know, we've heard many times, and especially recently, about the proclamation of the Nasi Dairein of La'alta L'tshuva, and therefore La'alta L'gula, that immediately holding by the redemption, and we already finished everything, even polishing the buttons, and you only have to be standing at the ready. So, and even that, we've heard that we already finished that also. So, in order to be received, to be Mekalev and name of Shech, it's going to take from Yad Ma'amr. So the emphasis is self-understood that we're already holding by the fulfillment of this prophecy, of the redemption, we're already holding by the fulfillment of Hashiv Sheftayach Kivarishayna. And not only that, the Yatzayach, but not only that, Kivatchila, that it has already begun. That's how the Rebbe introduces the whole topic that we're going to see, we're going to explain how it has already begun. It's not we're waiting for something to yet. We're talking about a prophecy and a promise that first going to have to wait for it to come after Mashiach, after we have the complete redemption. No. The Rebbe says, it's already begun. And throughout, that's the theme that the Rebbe starts off with, the idea that it has already begun. And in fact, towards the end of the Sicha, the Rebbe addresses the point, the Rebbe spells it out. Something that's not always done in every Sicha, the Rebbe really spells things out on a very simple, basic level. The Rebbe says that after he explains how we have already the advisor, the judge of the generation, the advisor of the generation, we'll get to what the significance of that is, but we already have the judge of the generation, the advisor of the generation, and we have, which is an unbelievable schus, and we also have the responsibility to listen to the judge of the generation. We have the responsibility to listen to the prophet of the generation. The Rebbe says, and through listening and through following their directives and instructions, so which is already sort of the beginning of the fulfillment of that which we've been praying for all these years, Hashiva Shefteinu Kvarishayna V'yatzeinu Kvatchila, that's what we've been davening for all these years, which will be fully fulfilled in the true and complete redemption. So we have that already now, especially that it's already expressed verbally, including the verbal expression that Atat Kom Tegula. So the Rebbe says we already have that. So then the Rebbe says, as a seemingly a side statement, the Rebbe says, based on this, we have an answer to the question that people ask about the fact that recently we're talking about, we keep just talking about how the Geula is coming immediately. So people ask, how will such an announcement go smoothly? And how would such a proclamation, how would it go smoothly? How could it be successful? How will the family members react And what will the world say about all this? That's the question that ever says people ask. Meaning, well, what's going to be the reaction to this message? How are people going to take it? So the Rebbe says, the answer is, if the matters of Geula were a chiddush, were a brand new thing, so maybe there would be room for such a question. How are people going to respond? How are people going to react? How are you going to be able to get this message through successfully if people are going to be resistant? The Rebbe says, but being that the Geula is not a chiddush, but rather all the matters of Geula have already begun. So the Rebbe says, and not only have they begun, but they've been drawn down and already begun being received in the world, in this physical lowly world of which there is no world lower. So if that's the case, it won't be a shock if the Geula comes, take it from Yad Mamash. It's not going to be a surprise. It's not going to be a shock. So what's the room for the question of how people are going to respond, or how people are going to react to this message, which is the message that the Rebbe said the week earlier, that everybody's obligated to publicize that the Geula is coming immediately. Even those who haven't yet internalized the message themselves are obligated to publicize it. So here the Rebbe addresses the question, how could you go about publicizing? Who knows how people are going to respond? How do you expect it to go smoothly and be successful if people are going to react negatively? No, that's only a question if the Geula would be a chiddush. But since all these things have already begun, including this prophecy of I will restore your judges and your advisors, so since that's all already begun and it's begun to be accepted, so then there's no room for that question. So here the Rebbe is not just, so on the surface the Rebbe is addressing the question of how the outsiders are going to react. But if you notice, the Rebbe uses two expressions. He says, how will the family members react? How will they respond? And what will the world have to say about it? So the message here that the Rebbe is trying to get through, and this is an important part of the message, it's not just, yes, it's very nice to hear that the Rebbe is the judge and the Rebbe is the prophet and the Rebbe is the advisor and you're supposed to listen to him. The Rebbe is saying it goes far beyond that. The point is that this is actually the beginning of the redemptive process, so much so that you have to stop relating to Geula as something both within yourself and both in how you deal with others. You have to stop relating to the idea that the message you're bringing the world is some radical new message that's not part of this world and it's going to just arouse tremendous resistance. And the emphasis, you have to yourself relate to the message as something that is actually happening, it's actually taking place, it's actually transpiring, it's developing, it's unfolding, it's you're in it. And therefore, when you're in it, so yeah, each new development is something that is accepted, is not only accepted, but it's anticipated, it's something you look forward to. But in order to convey the message that way, you have to relate to the message that way. If you come to somebody and saying, listen, I have this really shocking, radical message, which is something that, so the person is going to respond to the way you deliver the message. If you deliver the message as this shocking revelation that's going to rock your world and turn your life upside down, so you're going to get the reaction based on how you present the message. But so if you yourself understand and appreciate and relate to the fact that these are the facts on the ground, this is the reality, this is what's been happening, and you just have to catch up. It's not about something new in the sense of something that's of a change that breaks your world, but rather it's this is something that's here, it's begun. it's real, and therefore we have to connect to it and relate to it so that we can be ready for the next step in the process, then that's exactly how the message will be received. And in fact, this is really the key point of one of the key points of the whole sicha, is this idea that it's not just this message that's coming from above that you totally don't relate to and you totally don't understand and you totally don't appreciate, that's coming down and landing on your head and you just say, listen, pal, this is the way it is. You know, like it or lump it, this is the way it is. You better get used to it. That's not the message. The message is that this is the reality. This is what's happening. This is what's going on. And we have to figure out how to relate to it, how to connect to it, how to adapt and adjust to it, rather than treating it as something that's just coming down from above. And that's really the theme that Rebbe talks about in the Sicha. So Rebbe starts off with the question, how come in the Parsha it says they should appoint judges and enforcers? But in the prophecy of the future time, it says, doesn't mention enforcers, just says judges and advisors. What are these two different things? What is a judge and what is an advisor? We're asking for two separate things, judges and advisors. So what's the difference between a judge and an advisor? Third question that everybody asks is, how come by judges it says kevarishayna, as in the beginning? They both seem to be words. By Yitzchak it says kevatchila, and by Shiftach it says kevarishayna, and kevarishayna and kevatchila just seems to be referencing. We're asking that it should be like it was in the good old days, way back when the Jewish people were. In their own land, and they had their own court system and their own judges. So we seem to be asking that you go back to the way it was originally. That's what we're asking for, and that's what the prophet is promising us that we'll have. So why is it that in the one we say Kivat Rishayin, and in the other we say Kivat Chil? So the Rebbe says that the difference between a judge and an enforcer is that the judge hands down the ruling. The enforcer is, if the people are not accepting the ruling, then you need an enforcer to step in and force the people to accept the ruling. So therefore, since in the future time there's not going to be evil in the world, there's not going to be an evil inclination, so there'll be not going to be any real need for enforcers. So that way, we can understand why in the parasha it says you should appoint judges and enforcers. In the future time it says I will restore your judges and your advisors. Doesn't mention enforcers because there's no need for enforcers in the future time. Because there is no evil, so the people don't need to be forced. So if that's the case, so you're only going to need shaifta. Okay, so first of all, we still need to understand, so what are you going to need advisors for? If you only need judges, you don't need enforcers, what are you going to need advisors for? But the Rebbe, before the Rebbe gets to that, the Rebbe says, this idea is already alluded to in the fact that we call the Parsha just by the name Shaifta. Judges, why do we call the Parsha just by the name Shaifta? If it says they should have Shaiftim and Shaitrim, judges and enforcers, why do we only call the parasha by the name judges? In fact, the Medrash goes so far as to say, why does it say judges and enforcers? Because if all you have is a judge and no enforcers, you have nothing. The Medrash says one without the other is nothing, because he could rule all he wants, but if you have no one to enforce the rulings, people are just going to do whatever they feel like. So the Rebbe says the explanation. Also, we have this idea that in the count of the mitzvahs, we only count the mitzvah of appointing a judge. The mitzvah of appointing an enforcer is not a separate mitzvah, it's just a detail in that mitzvah that if need be, you should have enforcers as well. The Rebbe explains, because the whole idea of enforcers is only based on need. Yes, the Medrash says that without enforcers, the judge is ineffective, because if there's a need, if there's no need, then there's no need. It's not there's no separate requirement to actually have an enforcer. The enforcer is only there to assist the judge. If the judge can, if the people are going to listen to the judgment without an enforcer, so the enforcer becomes irrelevant. It's not necessary. So again, in the future time, when there's not going to be any evil in the world, and there's no evil inclination, so there's no need for the enforcer, and that's why the parasha is shaftim, and the mitzvah is shaftim, because there's no need in the future time. So the Rebbe says, if that's the case, then we can understand why you're going to need advisors in the future time. Why are you going to need advisors in the future time? What's the whole idea that you don't need an enforcer? Because people are going to listen to the judge. The Rebbe says there's two reasons why people are going to listen to the judge. One is that the external reason is because there's not going to be any evil in the world. There's not going to be an evil inclination. So if the judge says, you're just going to do it. But the question is, are you going to do it because you really want to do it, or are you going to do it because you have to do it? The Rebbe says, the shleimus, since in the future time, it's not just you're going to do the right thing because there's not going to be anything pulling you to do the wrong thing. Obviously, the shleimus is you're going to do the right thing because you want to do the right thing. Not just because you don't have an evil inclination pulling you to do the wrong thing. So it means because you relate to the right thing and you appreciate the right thing and you want to do the right thing. So the Rebbe says, that's why, in addition to judges, you're also going to have advisors. Why? What's the difference between a judge and an advisor? A judge is somebody who's handing down judgment from on high. His role is that he's... By definition of his role is that he's above the litigants, he's above the people, and also the message is this is what the Torah says you have to do. It's coming down from above the person. An advisor, the whole idea of advice is that somebody talks to you as an equal and makes you feel like that this is a good thing for you to do, so you're convinced that, and you relate to the fact that it's a good thing to do, so you do it because it's good for you. So when you do something because you were commanded from on high, so you do it out of Kabbalah Seil, this is the right thing to do, I have to do it. The feeling is like, I have to do it, I'm submitting to a higher ruling. When somebody gives you advice, so advice, generally the way advice works is you can take it or leave it, right? So why would you take it? You take it because you think it's a good idea. Because you relate to the advice. You think it's a good idea. So it's something that you want to do. You're not submitting. You're not doing it out of submission. You're doing it out of... the feeling that, hey, this is good for me, I want to do it. So why do you need both for? The reason why you need both is because, first of all, if you just have an advisor, when it comes to advice, you can either take it or leave it. And since this is the Torah ruling, it's not something that you can take it or leave it. You have to take it. So you need both. You need the shaver to tell you this is what you have to do. But you also need the yayats to help you internalize it and process it to feel like this is what's good for me to do. Not just something I'm doing because I have to do. But I'm doing it because it's something I want to do. It's something I appreciate. Advisor alone is not enough because it can't be, it's not optional, it's required. But a judge alone is also not enough, because if you're just doing it out of a sense of it being required, so you're not fully invested in what you're doing, you're sort of forcing yourself. The idea is that you're supposed to internalize the message of the judge so that you feel like you're doing it not just because you have to, that's because it's being imposed upon you from above, but this actually becomes your thing. You're doing it because you want to, because you relate to it, because it feels like it's your choice. So basically, so the Rebbe says, based on this, we can understand that why it says by Shiftaim it says Kivar Rishayna, by Yatzar it says Kivar Tchila. What's the difference between the word Rishayna and Tchila? And the Gemara says on the word Rishayn, Rishayn Dumei Karamashu. Even though the difference, when we say something exists first, first can indicate that it exists at a remove from what follows later. It's first means that it precedes it and is not necessarily followed by what comes after. It's removed. Beginning, the beginning of something means it's part of a sequence. The beginning. Something which is first can be removed from what comes later. The beginning of something means it's the beginning of a sequence, of a process, of a, something that's a continuation. So the Rebbe says, that's the difference between Sheftayach and Varishayna. The Sheftayach hands down a ruling from above. The judge says, this is the way it is. So, between that and the actual carrying out of his judgment, there's a break, so to speak. The fact that he handed down a ruling doesn't mean that the judgment is going to be carried out. Right. In fact, in the olden days, which we're referring to when we say Kivar Rishayna and Kivar Tchila, in fact, in the olden days, you sometimes needed an outside enforcer to come in and actually make it happen because of this break that exists between the ruling handed down and the person receiving the ruling carrying it out. But an advisor is Kivat Chila. An advisor, the way advice works is by you can only advise somebody if he's already receptive to it. If the person is already receptive, then you can give him advice. So even at the whole advice process means that there's a pre-existing receptiveness. It's from the beginning, right away, there's already receptiveness, even though it actually might take time till you explain all the advantages and all the, till he actually processes it and understands why it's disadvantage. But there's already, it's that's the process. But starting right away from the beginning, it's already, he's relating to it as his thing, as something which he's already receptive to. And it's just, you have to finish explaining and he has to finish processing, but it's just the beginning of something. It's already the beginning of something. It's not that which precedes. So the Rebbe says, so it comes out that right away when you're starting to give the advice, you already have the beginnings of the fulfillment of the advice. Even though it's going to actually, in time, it's going to be until it gets carried out, but because the receptiveness is already there. And the Rebbe says, with this we can understand why in the Torah commandment it says judges and advisors. And in the prophecy it says your judges and your advisors. Why does it say it that they're yours? Because an advisor, when he's giving you advice, that's what it feels like. It feels like it's yours. It feels like it's your thing. It's not, if you're just listening to his advice, it's his thing. So then you feel like that's his thing. That's not about me. That's about him. Which is like with a judge. A judge, it's about, the judge hands down the ruling. It's about him and what he says. It's not about me. The advisor is giving me advice. That makes it about me. So the Rebbe says, if that's the case, so we say, okay, that explains why it says your advisors. Why does it say your judges? Because that's the job of your advisors, to make that even the ruling that comes down from the judge should also feel like it's yours. You should process and internalize through the help of the advisor, the ruling and the judgment of the judge should also become yours. Rebbe says that this, we can actually say that that's also alluded to in the parasha, even though the parasha doesn't say yours, but the parasha says that the judges and the enforcers you should place in all your gates. That the Torah is telling you is that the ultimate point of the judges is that it should become yours. Right now it's just sheftim, not sheftachoya. The point is that it should be titen l'cha b'chol sha'arecha. It should become, you should place it to you in your gates, that it should become something that you internalize. And the Rebbe connects this with the commentary of the Shach al HaTorah that says that you should appoint judges in all your gates. The Shach al HaTorah explains that gates refers to the eyes, the ears, the nose, and the mouth. That you should use that your mind and the Torah that you learn with your mind should be the judge and the enforcer. Should be the judges that impose restraint and on those aspects with which you interact with the world outside you, with which you take in stimuli and data from the and give out in relating to the outside world. Those are your gates. And that, for that, you need to appoint your own internal judges, which means that through your study of Torah and following the instructions of the Torah, you should take control of your gates. So the emphasis, this relates to the same idea that we're saying, that you make it your gates, meaning that you should internalize it. That you should internalize it, because in that way it becomes your thing, and that is what enables you to actually exercise that level of control over the various orifices through which you interact with the world around. So the Rebbe says, so now we understand why after Mashiach comes, you're not going to need any enforcers, because you're going to have the shleimus of your judges and your advisors, meaning that you're both going to have the judgments and instructions based on the Torah that come from your judges, together with the, which, as the Rebbe explained, comes with a higher level of empowerment, because it's imposed from a higher level, it comes from above. Plus, you also have the advisors that will help internalize those instructions and those directions. So you're not going to need enforcers, because if you just had judges, so you lack the internal relating to the judgments that they're handing down. You're missing, and therefore, it's possible, even though it technically won't happen because you won't have an evil inclination, but it still means impossible based on your own internal compass, so to speak. You would not necessarily follow those directives, even though in practice you will. It's only when you have the Yetzayach that internally your inner faculties are completely in line with the instructions handed down by the judges. So the Rebbe says, since we explained that this idea of why it's necessary to have Yitzhak Kivatrila, in order for a person to hear advice, we said that he has to already be receptive. In order for a person to accept advice and to hear it and make it his own, he has to be already receptive. You can't just spring advice. In fact, there's a famous saying that there's three things that you can't force on somebody. One is a shidduch, the other is a loan, and the third thing is advice. You can't, you can't push on somebody's advice. He has to be receptive. If he's not receptive, you can't force it. So, since we explained that the person has to be receptive, so if you're saying that, what are you davening for? That when the Gula comes, we should have the Shaiftim and Yayatzim. We daven three times a day. Yes, Kashiv Shaiftim and Kvarishen and Yayatzim and Kvarachilla. That's what you're asking for. That we should have the Yayatz, it will help us internalize and process all the revelations of the Gula that are going to be come down from the Zreif. So if that's the case, well, you have to ready to be receptive to it. Or the advisor can't get through to you if you're not already, if you haven't already begun the process. So clearly the Rebbe says, by definition, this is something that has to begin before the Geula. Even though its completion will only take place after the Geula, it has to, by definition, begin before the Geula, because the whole point is that you have to have achieved a certain degree of receptiveness in order to be able to hear the advisor. So when did you get that receptiveness? Before the fulfillment, the actual fulfillment in the time of Geula. So you have to already be pre-receptive. So when are you developing that receptiveness? In the moments of right before the Geula. So the Rebbe says, so how do you do that? Obviously, you have to have that. And in general, we know as a rule that all of the revelations of the future time are dependent on our actions and our service in the time of Gola. So in general, every revelation of the future time, you have to already have an Avoda that's similar to that in advance. Here especially, when we're saying the whole point is you have to have pre-existing receptiveness to the message of the advisors. So you have to have that avoda now. So how do you have that avoda now? You have that avoda now by listening, by following the judgment of the judges and the advisors of each generation. So that's the way you prepare yourself for the receptive, to be receptive to the message of the advisors, which enable you to internalize the judgment of the judges. And that pre-receptiveness you get by doing that avoda now, of listening to the judges and listening to the advisors. So either the judge, first of all, is any rabbinic authority that you have to listen to, and the advisors, who are the advisors of the time of Golos? Generally speaking, the advisors are either... Sometimes the judge himself is somebody that we say in the Mishnah that we learned in Pirkei Avos, that those who learn Torah in the right way, you benefit from them in advice and guidance. Or that he has a separate advisor, a guide, by fulfilling the directive of Aseh L'Charav, of making yourself a teacher that helps you process and internalize. Then the Rebbe breaks here and goes off to explain that these dual functions of judge and prophet are related to the dual function of the two different laws that we find in our parasha. One is appointing judges and listening to them, and the other is that God says, I will send you prophets and you should listen to them. So the Rebbe says that the prophet, that the judge is the judge, and the prophet is actually similar to the advisor. And he explains what's the difference between the judgment and prophecy. Judgment means this is the ruling of the Torah, and you hand down the ruling. The way prophecy works is there's a divine revelation, and it has to be internalized and processed through the faculties of the prophet until he actually expresses it and verbalizes it in his own words. He doesn't get a text to repeat. It's a revelation that he internalizes and processes. In fact, the Rambam says that one of the primary roles of the prophet is to answer and to respond about things that have to do with worldly affairs. The Rambam writes that the prophets were sent to tell us about occurrences that are going to take place in the world. And the prophet gives instructions in certain things like, you should go to a certain place or don't go. You should wage war today. You shouldn't wage war. Rambam gives examples of worldly advice and guidance in how to conduct yourself in this world. And so, just like we have the obligation to follow the judges in all generations, that obligation is a mitzvah that those who record the mitzvah say that this is a law that applies at all times, even when Jews are not in Eretz Yisrael and don't have their own countries, and they don't, that you have to listen to the judges, the Torah judges of the time. Rambam says the same thing applies to prophecy too, even though technically Chazal tell us that at a certain point prophecy ended, but the fact is we see that the Rambam did record the laws of prophecy in his legal code, and as explained in various sichas over the years that Rambam refers to, we explained that first and additionally the Rambam says that this is a very foundational belief that God sends prophecy to human beings. Rambam says, why does he bring that in his legal in his legal code, this foundational belief, if it's not even applicable anymore? If you say, well, he brings the laws that apply after Mashiach comes, yeah, but this is not a law. He's saying the foundational piece of information. If after Mashiach comes, and then Moshe Rabbeinu will be here, and then all those other great prophets will be here with us, so hell no. What does he need to know? So he said, the Rebbe says, because the Rambam holds that there is prophecy before Mashiach comes, as the Rambam writes in his famous letter, that it's a certain fact that prophecy will return to the Jewish people before the coming of Mashiach, and especially the prophecy of Mashiach himself. So why will there be this prophecy? So this is one of the reasons, is because like their prophecy is that it works like an advisor that helps you internalize the divine revelations that come through the Torah as presented by the judge. And therefore, that part of the preparation for the ultimate Yetzayach Kivat Chila is, that's part of the role of the Navi before the actual, of Navua, before the actual redemption. So, okay, there we go, discuss even more this union of Navua. So then here's where the Rebbe goes and starts like getting very explicit. The Rebbe says that it's possible in every generation there should be a prophet, especially after the time which the Rambam refers to when he says that the Nevuah will return to the Jewish people, and the Rambam says that this is a preface to the coming of Mashiach, especially the prophecy of Mashiach himself, that Mashiach himself will be functioning and it will be a great prophet close to the level of Moshe Rabbeinu. Chazal say that Moshe is the first redeemer and is the final redeemer, and in every generation there's someone who's worthy of this role. So therefore you need to know as a law, even in this time, that there's the existence of the revelation of prophecy as a microcosm and a beginning of the ultimate prophecy that will take place after redemption. In other words, this is not a new development that will first begin after Mashiach comes, but rather it starts earlier. It starts in the times immediately preceding the coming of Mashiach, the union of prophecy in the world. As we said, the same thing about advisors, that you have to have that, because you have to have that pre-existing receptiveness when the Geula actually comes. So the Rebbe says, based on this, we'll understand what the advantage of the later generations, especially our generation, especially in this time, because, as we said at the beginning of the Sicha, right, that this is already, we already have the beginning of the fulfillment, that since based on the proclamation of the Nasi of our generation that we completed everything, so, and the Rebbe says like this, from the time that the Torah gave the commandment to appoint judges till today, we never had. There's the time when the Torah gave the appointment to appoint judges, and at that time you needed enforcers. Then there's the time that the Torah talks about in the future when you'll have judges and you'll have advisors. Rebbe says, throughout, we still needed to have enforcers. But after the tremendous volume of our actions and our service throughout the generations, it's understood that we're becoming closer and closer to the situation where we will no longer need enforcers and we'll only need advisors, especially in the most recent generations, when we also had the addition to the revelation of Pnimius HaTorah, starting with the Arizal, and then the Yafutzu Ma'inasech HaChutzu through Rabbi Seinu Nisiyenu, which they are the ones who brought prophecy back to the Jewish people. And they are the prophets of the generation, and they are the judges and prophets of our generation. The fact that they're judges is actually alluded to in their title. A Nasi means someone who's way above everybody else. And a Rebbe means somebody who teaches Torah to everybody else. So that's where he's operating in the role where he's above everybody and handing down the way it is. And also as an advisor, that they are the ones that we see, the quotes, the Geras HaKadosh, the Rebbe, that the role of the Rebbe is to give advice in matters of Torah and Yerushalayim. And also we see that he even gave advice in worldly matters. The Rebbe says, especially through the revelation of Chassidus Chabad, so which enables that even the animal, the intellect of the animal soul could understand, and if the intellect of the animal soul could understand it, at least on the level that he appreciates it as good advice, even if he can't really relate to it as it is at its ultimate level, but he's at least prepares him as a foretaste for the time. We at least have the beginning of the idea of being able to internalize and process all the revelations of Pnimius HaTorah that will come with Mashiach. And the Rebbe says it's added even more in our generation, where we have Yafutzu Ma'inasecha in all corners of the world in a way that everybody can understand. It's not so mystical, Yafutzu Ma'inasecha, but literally in all corners of the world and in all languages and in all places in a much greater way than it ever was before. So the Rebbe said, since we already finished everything, and here's an important point that I wanted to get to. The Rebbe says, since we already finished everything, including the work of our Rabbeim as the Shaftim and Yeitzim, in terms of preparing up to Gevulah. So the Rebbe says, so therefore the generation is ready, and it's understood that we've already come to the time of the fulfillment of Ashiva Sheftayah Kibarishana Biyatzayah Kibatchillah, and it's no longer necessary to have enforcers, because everything has already been refined. After we've already had this, the foretaste in the beginning through our Rabbe. So the Rebbe seems to be saying that we already have that. So here again is this idea, the point that the Rebbe is trying to make is that the world that we live in now, the reason why, again, and then throughout, the Rebbe continues, and the Rebbe says that we have the prophet of the generation, and the Rebbe goes into prophet that another prophet testified about him, that he's a prophet. He's certainly a prophet who did miracles, like we saw by the Rebbe, and a prophet who was another prophet testified about him that he's a prophet. You don't even need to see the miracles, and you have to listen to him because these are the words of God as he spoke to him. He's not saying his own. He's only saying over what he heard from God. So the lesson is that we have to publicize to all the people of the generation that we merited, that our generation, that the Eibishter appointed a person with free will who's head and shoulders above everyone else in the generation, and appointed him as the judge of the generation, but he's also the advisor of the generation and the prophet of the generation, and he gives the directives and instructions, and we have to. For all Jews and all people, in all matters of Torah mitzvahs, and also about everyday life and your everyday conduct, in the way of B'chal Derechecha Da'eichem, Masechet Shem Shamayim, tell the ultimate prophecy that he has brought, the prophecy of La'alta Legula, and that Hinei Zeh Mashiach, and immediately Hinei Zeh Mashiach Bo. The Rebbe says, together with with this great merit that we merited to have such a person, it also comes with a responsibility, because you're obligated to listen to the judge and you're obligated to listen to the prophet. And the Rebbe says, even though we said the prophet is like an advisor, and advice is something you could take it or leave it, the Rebbe says, but even when it comes to advice, certainly as a judge, the rule is, the Rebbe says, Sheftayach in the plural, even though we're saying that there's one judge of the generation, there's one advisor of the generation, but the prophecy says in the plural, your judges, your advisors, the Rebbe says, because it includes all of the Rabbeim, because the leader of our generation includes in him the leader all the Rabbeim, and therefore what he says, he's not saying as an individual, he's saying as the many. And therefore, even if you hold that of yourself very strongly, and you hold of your own opinions very strongly, the fact that it's one against the many, because the Rev is not an individual, he's the many, therefore you should listen to him and even understand that it's actually good advice. It's not just the orders from above, it's not just instructions, directives, but it's actually good advice. The Rebbe says, through fulfilling the directives and instructions, and especially as it's come down in speech, as I mentioned at the beginning, I quoted this part, you'll have the answer to those people who have the question, what are people going to say? How are people going to react? And the Rebbe says, Bepashtus, the lesson is that you have to use your own internal enforcers and your own internal advisors, using your koiches of your intellect and your emotions, and everyone has to be the judge and the advisor in his own home. But more generally speaking, that every Jew, men, women, and children have to accept and fulfill the directives of the judge and the advisor of the generation, and it's also mashpia on his wife and family, until everybody he could possibly reach, until it reached the entire world. This idea of that you have to listen to the judge and the prophet of the generation. So this idea that the Rebbe already said, this idea that the way you have to look at the world is that we say that everything's already mavurah, and therefore your approach to the world is not just by bringing down a message of this is the way it is, pal, like it or lump it, but you actually have to you have to present and give over these directives and these instructions in a way that the person appreciates the fact that it's in their own best interest. It's actually good for them. It's actually good advice. And the Rebbe says that the receptiveness exists. It's not that you have to first create the receptiveness. Right? Very often when you're dealing with someone who's not receptive to something, it's a whole process. First you have to make them receptive. Then once they're receptive, then you could start. So when you encounter resistance, what's your reaction when you encounter resistance? You push harder because you relate to someone who's resisting and someone who's fighting you. So you fight harder and you try to force it. But it's the opposite. The Rebbe is saying that the whole point of this message, that's one of the challenges. This has been the challenge on the whole Mashiach campaign from day one, is basically, again, people seem to be operating with two choices. One choice is that if you encounter resistance, you tuck your tail between your legs and you run. Okay? You duck and hide and you shut up and take, tone down the message because we're encountering resistance. That seems to be choice one. The Rebbe says, that's clearly not an option that the Rebbe's even considered. The Rebbe's not even feels not even necessary to negate that as an option. And the assumption is you have to follow the instructions of the advisor and the the judge and advisor of the generation, if he says you have to publicize, you have to publicize. That's
what do you
not,
publicize?
They never said what you publicize. They never said you publicize that Mashiach is coming immediately, and you publicize that there's a judge of the generation, there's a prophet of the generation. And in there, they never put in brackets, and you have to listen to him, not because he's saying things that he heard from, that was God said to other prophets, and he's just repeating it, but actually God said it to him directly. Which is like, so those who try to say, well, the Rebbe only said in the name of the Friedrich Rebbe, he wasn't, so the Rebbe like put in that extra line there that you should know that what the prophet says, he's not saying it as something that was said to another prophet, he's saying it as something the Avish told him directly. The other option seems to be that when you encounter resistance, you try to steamroll it. So basically, the two options seem to be, neither one is what the Rebbe is presenting in this Sicha. The Rebbe is presenting in the Sicha that the whole approach, the entire approach from beginning to end, the whole approach is based on that A, this is a judgment handed down from on high, so it's non-negotiable. Shutting it down, backing down, backtracking, covering up, that's not an option. But beating people over the head with it is also not an option. The point is that people have to, that you have to assume the receptiveness is there, and you have to tease out the pre-existing receptiveness. Even if superficially it appears like there's resistance, you don't, that resistance is not real. That resistance is only superficial, and there's actually an existing receptiveness. And you need to bring the message in a way that you bring the message to people who are already pre-receptive. And that's how you have to bring the message, that's how you have to deliver the message, that's how you have to, even when you encounter what seems to be resistance, you're not supposed to be fighting the resistance, you're supposed to be addressing the receptiveness. The receptiveness is there. It's all ready, it's all done, it's all, but you have to process it. You have the kvatchila, you have the beginning of it. You have to work through the process, because this process is also ultimately only a beginning relative to the actual revelation that takes place after the complete redemption. But that's the key here, the key that somehow we seem to be losing, and we have the same problem when it relates to ourselves. One of the things that the Rebbe emphasizes in the Sikh is that that's the same way you have to relate to ourselves. That sometimes it's easier, sometimes even somebody who's successful at relating to others is able to ignore their superficial resistance and react to them as if they're really receptive. Sometimes when it comes to our own internal resistance, we take our own internal resistance very seriously. And if I feel like I'm resisting, say, okay, listen, I got to take it easy on myself, or I got to beat myself up. Those are the two choices that people have when they experience some internal resistance. And the answer is no. If you seem to be experiencing some internal resistance, it means, aha, this is just a sign that I need to be focusing on my internal receptiveness, because it's there, even if I'm not even consciously aware of it. What I have to be dealing with is the fact that yes, I am open, I am absolutely and completely receptive to the idea and the concept and the reality of living my life in that way. As the Rebbe says, includes following and internalizing all the directives and instructions of the Rebbe at each Farbrengen, comes down with many directives and instructions, and you know, sometimes you look at it and you say, wow, there's just so much, how would I ever, you know, it just seems like so overwhelming, and then you know, you feel like you're resisting. This is, don't take your own resistance too seriously either. You have to know that you're already, everything's already been refined, including your own animal, and you have to get, but it all depends on how you relate to it, including how you relate to yourself. And certainly how you relate to the like the wife, like the Rebbe says, the wife and family, those who you come into contact with, and ultimately the entire world. And you see time and again, the every area in which you see any form of Chabad outreach activity, in any manner, shape, or form, you see that when they deal with the people as if they're bringing them something that's good for them, they're successful. And when they deal with the people, if they don't bring it, then they're not successful because they didn't bring it. And even if they do bring it, but they bring it in a way where you're trying to shove something down people's throats, it's also not particularly successful. Even if you may have the occasional success here and there, but it's as a whole, it's not successful. And what is successful is any message that you bring out to the world, and even l'havdil to goyim, but you bring it in a way that the point of the message is that this is good for you. And I'm assuming you're open to hearing and understanding why it's good for you. The response that you get is that people are receptive and people do accept it, even if initially, superficially, they seem to be resistant. So we have to, if this is true in all things, it's especially in the Inyan of Mashiach, where the Rebbe says, you got to tell it like it is, the way it was handed down from on high by the judge, but you also have to tell it in a way, you have to convey it in a way that, A, it's already a reality, it's already happening, it's already here, it's not some kind of new radical change, and that also it's something that people relate to, and people are receptive to, and people are appreciate, and through that we actually come to, as the Rebbe says in the end of the Sikha, that the judges are in your gates, the gates of your cities in Eretz Yisrael, and the gates of the Beis HaMikdash, and we have the full and complete revelation of the ultimate judge and prophet and advisor in the form of Mashiach himself.